This is Cindy Gomez-Shump with 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, coming to you with another important update from the Sacred Stone Camp at Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. In response to the recent rash of biased media reports, blogs, and articles surrounding the events at Standing Rock, an important message was posted on social media by Unity USA about media bias and propaganda surrounding the stand against the Dakota Access Pipeline. It reads as follows. Information is power. Disinformation is the abuse of power. Disinformation is intentionally false or inaccurate information that is spread deliberately. It is an act of deception and false statements to convince someone of untruth. Disinformation often can include distribution of false information presented as real information, using selected photographs to try to direct public opinion, or spreading dangerous rumors and fabricated intelligence as truth. It is mostly used to try to undermine the position of a competitor or opponent. Some common disinformation methods include using experts or authorities to spread false information or rumors. We have seen this in the way that the oil companies have used law enforcement, state government officials, and others to spread rumors of quote-unquote armed natives or quote-unquote outside agitators to try to vilify and discredit the water protectors. The use of front groups or fake news to promote their side of the story and to discredit the water protectors. There are several new fake blogs and news pages that have been created since the hashtag NoDapple protests began. Additionally, many of the regional bloggers have been engaged to promote slanted news stories and plant false information almost like clockwork, creating an echo chamber. Have you noticed that North Dakota media and bloggers seem to all be on the same page all the time? This is because they are being fed information from the same source, Big Oil, who is submitting coordinated press releases to promote their story. Manufacturing uncertainty. Recently, there have been news stories seeking to create fear of the protesters. Local ranchers and farmers are highlighted, speaking about their fear of being attacked or having their properties vandalized. There has been no reason to feature this sort of story, but the media machine is doing it to create a climate of uncertainty, thereby painting the water protectors as potential villains. So how can you fight back against these and other forms of propaganda and misinformation? First, check credentials. Check the credentials of the experts used in news stories. Who do they work for? Do they have any ties to Dakota Access? Why are they even being quoted? Number two, do your own homework. Don't take the word of a media source or an expert just because they have a title or seem legitimate. Scrutinize. Get additional information from reliable sources. Number three, follow the money. Places like sourcewatch.org, that's sourcewatch.org, can help tie some of the financial strings together so that you can see who is funding whom. Many experts or pundits are paid to provide their opinions, so they are not reliable. If there is a financial link, there is likely a reason for that. And finally, if you see something, say something. Set the record straight. If you find someone spreading disinformation on a topic, counter it. If the disinformation appears in the media, correct it in a comment or a letter to the editor or in the online comment section. Use social media when necessary to set the facts straight. Audio obtained in November of 2011 by CNBC of an oil industry conference at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Houston, Texas, exposes the employment of military-style counterinsurgency methods and PSYOPs applications used against those who oppose oil industry actions or projects. The comments were recorded by an environmental activist who passed along the audio files to CNBC. The activist, Sharon Wilson, is the director of the Oil and Gas Accountability Project for the nonprofit environmental group Earthworks. She said that she paid full price to attend the conference for the two-day event and wore a name tag identifying her organization as she recorded the conference. In the first audio clip you're going to hear, Matt Carmichael, the manager of external affairs for Anadarko Petroleum, who spoke on the topic of understanding how unconventional oil and gas operators are developing a comprehensive media relations strategy to engage stakeholders and educate the public. He said he had several recommendations for the oil industry media professionals at the event, one of which he said involved the military. Let's listen.
So, again, this is all industry stuff. Let's talk about this plan and how we executed our media plan. If you're a PR representative in this industry, in this room today, I recommend you do three things. These are three things that I've read recently that are pretty interesting. Download the U.S. Army/Marine Corps counterinsurgency manual. Because we are dealing with an insurgency. There's a lot of good lessons in there. And coming from a military background, I've found the insight in that extremely remarkable. With that said, there's a course provided by Harvard and MIT twice a year. It's called Dealing with an Angry Public. Take that course. And tie back to the Army Marine Corps Counterinsurgency Manual is that a lot of the officers in our military are attending this course. It gives you the tools, it gives you the media tools on how to deal with a lot of the controversy that we as an industry are dealing with. And thirdly, I have a copy of Rumsfeld Rules. If you're all familiar with Donald Rumsfeld, that's kind of my Bible by the way I operate.
This next clip is from a session entitled Designing a Media Relations Strategy to Overcome Concerns Surrounding Hydraulic Fracturing. In it, Range Resources Communication Director Matt Pizzarella spoke about, quote-unquote, overcoming stakeholder concerns about the fracking process.
I think we have to get out ahead of all these issues. Everybody knows this. We've talked a lot about it. One thing that we've worked a lot on at Range is just getting more proactive in the community. It's not something that we've done before. In other parts of the nation, it makes no sense for us to do that. In other parts, in Pennsylvania, for instance, we have several. I think Matt raised the issue of looking to other industries, in this case, the Army and the Marines. We have several former PSYOPs folks that work for us at Range because they're very comfortable in dealing with localized issues and local governments. Really, all they do is spend most of their time helping folks develop local ordinances and things like that, but very much having that understanding of PSYOPs in the Army and in the Middle East has applied very helpfully here for us in Pennsylvania.
The following is a speech from Sitting Bull, which was submitted to us via mail by one of our listeners and most loyal fan at KPPPLP Radio. His name is Harlan Sylvester. Thanks again for your support and comments. We truly appreciate them. The speech he sent us was originally published in the New York Tribune, July 10, 1876, and was taken from Charles Eastman's book, Indian Heroes. The title of the speech is, My Brothers, Shall We Submit? Here's the introduction to the speech, followed by the speech as it was reprinted. About April 1876, Sitting Bull was encamped on Tongue River with many Hunkpapas under Four Horns, Black Moon, Pretty Bear, Bear's Cap, Little Knife, Iron Dog, Crow King, and Gaul. In addition to the Hunkpapas, there were some Santees and Yanktonians under Ink Paduta, White Lodge, and Whiteface, Oglalas under Crazy Horse, Black Twin, Little Hawk, Big Road, Stone Dog, He Dog, and Low Dog, Mini Conjus under Lame Deer, Hump, Flying By, Bull Eagle, and Makes Room, Blackfeet under Scabby Head, Sans Arc under Red Bear, Spotted Eagle and Fast Bear, Brules under Flying Chaser and Crow Dog, Two Kettles under Runs the Enemy, and Many Cheyennes under Old Man Chiefs, White Bull or Ice Bear, and Dirty Moccasins, and Warrior Chiefs, Crazy Head, and Lame White Man. During one council, Sitting Bull criticized the American culture, in particular farming, materialism, and the prerogative of the rich over the poor. His speech appears here, evidently polished to some degree by Charles Eastman, who recorded it. "Behold, my brothers, the Spirit has come. The earth has received the embraces of the sun, and we shall soon see the results of that love. Every seed is awakened, and so has all animal life. It is through this mysterious power that we too have our being, and we therefore yield to our neighbors, even our animal neighbors, the same right as ourselves to inhabit this vast land. Yet hear me, friends. We have now to deal with another people, small and feeble when our forefathers first met them, but now great and overbearing. Strangely enough, they have a mind to till the soil, and the love of possessions is a dark disease in them. These people have made many rules that the rich may break, but the poor may not. They have a religion in which the poor worship, but the rich will not. They even take tithes of the poor and the weak to support the rich and those who rule. They claim this mother of ours, the earth, for their own use, and fence their neighbors away from here and deface her with their buildings and their refuse. They compel her to produce out of season, and when sterile, she is made to take medicine in order to produce again. All this is sacrilege. This nation is like a spring freshet. It overruns its banks and destroys all who are in its path. We cannot dwell side by side. Only 7 years ago, we made a treaty by which we were assured that the buffalo country should be left to us forever. Now they threaten to take that from us also. My brothers, shall we submit? Or shall we say to them, first, kill me before you can take my possessions of my fatherland? Aldo Sewanee is the Director of Education and Training at the First Nations Women's Alliance and co-founder of Wika Agli, an alliance of Lakota men to reclaim their responsibilities as providers for the Lakota Nation's women and children by resuming their roles as traditional leaders. He posted an update about the release of Greg Cloud from jail, his friend, and the other co-founder of Wika Agli. Let's listen.
And what they're up to is no good. They're up to violating civil rights and holding other water protectors against and in violation of their own civil rights. But I'll let Greg talk to you and tell you about his story and what he went through.
I'm out. Brother bailed me out. Well, I didn't really bail him out. All charges got dismissed until further notice. There's still probably wanting, wanting to carry through with charges. So it's not entirely dismissed yet. It's kind of confusing, but at the same time, if we just have people stay, keep informed with it, we'll try to keep you as informed as possible. Spent the night in jail here. It was a little different. I was there with probably about 6-7 other men who were arrested during the action yesterday. And they're all pretty cool. They're all pretty chill. I was the last one to visit with the attorney. Out of 21, I was the 22nd one to visit with the attorney. Last night about 1 o'clock in the morning, is the last time we visited with her, Angela Gibbons. And after I visited with her about what was going to happen and take place today, of which didn't really go as planned, she had left. The officers let her out, and I went to open the door, but it was locked. They locked me in there, and ended up sitting there for hours. I didn't get out of the visiting cell, and it's a small little 2.5-3 feet by 6 feet maybe, with just a phone in the window and the door with the little square in the door. And I was sitting there until 4 o'clock. It was almost 4 o'clock before the officers came to check on me. And I pounded on the door numerous times. I tried to push the door open, rattling the door numerous times. I tried calling out, and this little room was cold. It was horrible. I mean, I sat there curled up in a ball, and my legs fell asleep. And when they finally did come to get me at 4 o'clock, I asked them why they kept me locked in there for so long. And I asked what time it was, and I asked how long they had me in there. And the only response that they had was, well, maybe almost a half hour. It wasn't that long. And, hey, man, we're busy, okay? They weren't too busy. I was the last one visiting with the attorney, and everybody else was in the cells and their rooms. And they deliberately left me in there for God knows what reasons, maybe just to prove a point that they have the upper hand. But they don't. I'm here to tell you all that they don't have the upper hand. We're gaining the upper hand on them legally. You know, went to ceremonies for the past few months, and in ceremonies, the grandfather's comment and told us that back then they had to fight the government, fight the Calvaries, because they didn't have any choice. Today we have a choice, and that choice is through the court systems, through the legal fight. We have a choice to change laws, to write laws, to create so much litigation against the government to change things for the betterment of our nations, the red nations. I see my sister just commented, you need a lawyer. I do have a lawyer. We're working on getting one for South Dakota, or North Dakota, to represent me here. Also, we got ACLU helping, and different people from places that are really doing a lot of research and trying to help us navigate our way through the court systems here in North Dakota, of which are corrupt. The mistreatment of the inmates and the folks that are in there, in kind of a weird way. They're almost overly friendly, but kind of in a mean type of way. But yeah, we're out. We're going to get ready, head back to camp. There's a little bit of that story there. I want to get into something more deeper later on. Do another video, or a more less live video. We'll kind of explain a lot of different things. But like I said, I'm out. The charges right now are on a pause. The North Dakota, they still want to carry through with charges on me for some reason. I don't know why they didn't tell me anything, but last night when I was arrested, they put cuffs on me and then told me that the bond had no warrant, or the warrant didn't have no bond, rather. And it threw us for a loop. It really threw us for a loop. So all night I was thinking about ways to figure things out. And when my brother Aldo come to get me, he had a lot of things figured out, and I think y'all heard from him, and literally just got out, literally here, we're in a parking lot at a church.
When Nia Locke posted October 2nd, the temporary injunction is only in place until the court hearing coming up Wednesday, October 5th. This injunction is the only thing stopping construction for 20 miles to the east and west of the river, so depending on the outcome, construction could theoretically resume up to the river. They never had and still don't have the permit to bore under the Missouri River. They started this project just assuming they would get it from the Army Corps of Engineers. This is why you should never assume. It makes an ass out of you, not me. Whatever happens, we remain vigilant as protectors. Hashtag no dapple, Indigenous rising, one fight, water is life.
Hey, tell me what you just found out.
So, I did some research. being a healthcare major, it's what we do. And I did a money trail. And so I followed the money and I found out that some people who are heavily invested in this pipeline are going to be the, or are projected to be some of the new energy advisors for one of the presidential candidates. I also found out that this pipeline is going to connect to another one that leads straight to a refinery in Texas. And the all of the crude oil of the same quality that reaches that same refinery in Texas as is being sent from here, the vast majority of that gets exported. So all this oil is being exported, and it's not for the American people. All it's going to do is create temporary jobs. However, what the Dakota Access Pipeline company is doing is using eminent domain to take people's land. And eminent domain can only be used by governments, not private entities. It can only be used by private entities if they work with the government and can prove that they are going to benefit the nation or state, like the entire state, something like that. And Dakota Access cannot prove that because they can't even prove that this oil is going to remain in the country. So this is illegal. It's completely illegal by any means. There's a group of 15 farmers, I believe, in I want to say Iowa, that are filing a lawsuit on this premises because it's for private gain, and the only people that are going to gain anything are the CEOs of Dakota Access Pipeline. So water, this is going to cross the Missouri and the Mississippi rivers, which 18 million people directly get their water from these two rivers. Not only that, but these two rivers feed the grain belt of America. So if you drink water or eat food or breathe air, because according to Johns Hopkins and Cornell universities, these pipelines leak radon and methane, not only into the ground, into watersheds, into wells, but into the air. And a lot of these micro leaks can't be detected, but what they're finding out is that pregnant women that live in and around these areas are giving birth to low birth weight infants with low Apgar scores, developmental delays. You're seeing spontaneous environmental asthma, emphysema, even lung cancer pop up in all of these areas. And you know, it's amazing because my eyes were completely closed to this until I decided to just drive down here and drop some water off. And then, you know, I started doing my homework and I started researching, and it's there. You can find this information. You can see all the pipeline leaks around the country. And then once these leak and communities are suffering, these oil companies don't answer to anyone. There's local governments all over the place. I believe it was just in, you have to correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say it was in California where there was a leak, and the local government asked the pipeline to shut its operation down, and they just didn't. They're like, nope, we're going to continue doing what we're doing, but we'll consider your request. So they answer to nobody, and everyone's being affected. So if you, like I said, if you drink water, breathe air, or eat food in America, this is your problem. You need to help.
Next, we have some interviews from the Sacred Stone Camp from mid-September.
My name is Joanne Spotted Bear. My Lakota name is Mato Gleshkawi.
Where are you from?
Originally, I'm from Wounded Knee, but I live in Reno, Nevada.
So can you tell me why you're here?
I am here. I got a phone call from one of my aunties in Pine Ridge Indian Reservation while I was in Reno, and she told me, she told me that I had to come over here and that I had to help the people. And see, I self-studied law for 9 years going on 10, and I won a federal court case with Wesley Glenn Dick in Reno, Nevada without ever having a bar card. And then I took 2,000 documents to the United Nations where I became equal status at the United Nations, which is one of the highest privileges like an ambassador. You get to have a privilege in there with that equal status.
How does this gathering make you feel? It's the largest gathering of natives in 150 years.
I love it. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful to see everyone. And it's just, I mean, you never thought in your whole life you'd be a part of something whole, so historical. And it's like, wow. But I didn't know that the Dakota Access Pipeline would bring us all together. So in some way, we have to thank them for bringing us together. And the other way, on the Dakota Access Pipeline, the pipeline itself is not the way we should have came together. It shouldn't have been this way, because we're all sharing this earth together, and we're all sharing the water and the food and the resources. And I feel bad for them for taking money and greed over human life, because it wasn't just our kids, it's their kids too.
Can you tell me, has there been anything you've seen that's been especially concerning? I went through a few roadblocks that kind of made me a bit upset. Has there been anything that's been a bit upsetting to you?
What happened is, the upsetting part for me is that I went through that same roadblock that you went through, and we asked them if they were the National Guard, and they wouldn't answer none of our questions. And so what we think is that was the CIA dressed in military uniform, and I think that needs to be changed, that the CIA or anybody is not to use the military uniforms.
So is there anything that's been especially uplifting, something that you've seen here that's really given you some hope?
For the first time, I got to meet my family. Wambli Ohichika is my great-great-great-great-grandfather. Hey. No, for real. And he had kids named Spotted Bear, Walking Rope Lady. And his kids, they fought in the Little Bighorn, the Wounded Knee Massacre, World War One, World War Two, and the next gen one. And then my father, he fought in... he was a police officer during the Wounded Knee occupation days, known as the American Indian Movement, and he walked off his job. And the uplifting part is to carry that on and know I'm a dignitary at the United Nations level, but more so, it's a great honor to carry that title, but it's a greater honor to carry a chinupa and be able to sit here in my regalia and represent all of our people to the best of my ability in a most humble way. It's good that way. And sometimes you feel like a Hollywood movie star, but you're nowhere near Hollywood.
I think you're kind of better.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that it's humbling. It's good experience. It's a great experience to be here.
How do you feel about the recent court decision?
Well, according to the recent court decision, this is how I do feel. 1933, the United States went bankrupt. Roosevelt fired Congress, and he fired himself, and he handed all the original documents to the United Nations 12 years prior to Geneva, Switzerland being built. And then the states came together and formed the illegal Congress. And so technically, Washington, D.C. has no federal writ to conduct business. They have no federal charter, no EIN number, and no bond. It's all illegal. And so when I was speaking to the congressman here a few minutes ago, my question was, when are you guys going to come together and talk about the 1933 bankruptcy? Because the state... Oh, you left me out. I'm jealous. Oh, there you go. Okay, sorry about that. I really love spam. It's an Indian thing.
I kind of like spam too. I didn't expect to. Then I learned. It's delicious.
But according to the 1933 bankruptcy, now you have Washington issuing out charter numbers to all the states. So every single state in this country named America has a charter number, but they have no treaties and they have no federal writ. So all of them charters, if the state of North Dakota gets pulled, then so can their charters. I mean, the charter gets pulled from the state of North Dakota because they have no treaty. That treason against treaty, that is a death sentence. Okay? So now all the world can be involved, and they are involved, and there is a lot of people out there
We are going to be having a nonviolent direct action training 101 down at the Austin Camp at 2 o'clock.
My Facebook page, I used to do a radio station, a radio show with Lacey J. Dalton and Eddie Floyd. They had 43 radio stations, and 30 days later, Native Voice 1 came in with 153. It raised up that radio station to 197 radio stations around the world, and then we video recorded and made it go viral, and then 226 countries and over 9,000 ambassadors around the world know what I'm telling you today. And so it just amazes me that our Indian country, I hope to God that they get this message and learn it, because this is a big, big issue. Jack Dimbleweaker did open up a can of worms that he cannot fool someone. He violated it. And he violated his constitutional oath, which is I solemnly swear to protect and serve the United States Constitution, whereas treaties are supreme law of the land.
How do you feel about this, and how do you feel about its length? Do you think it's going to continue on for months, or do you think it might die off because of violence from police, or... How do you think this is going to end or begin?
I think that once everybody understands the 1933 bankruptcy and how serious this is around the world, that the police and Dakota XL pipeline in the United States is going to want to do a negotiation to keep their title as United States of America. But this is not America. Because by this time, it's going to be viral that America is named after Amerigo Vespucci, who died in 1512 of syphilis. He was the explorer with Christopher Columbus. Yeah.
I'm learning so many things right now.
It took me 10 years. You got to remember, I self-studied it. It's a lot of stuff to hold in your head, and yes, it's very important. Very important.
Do you think there's anything you'd like to say to the general public that you think they don't know or they need to know about this movement? I've been hearing a lot of things in my community that I know are obviously lies, but like pipe bombs, hatchets, how these people are violent, etc.
No. A Lakota woman from Wounded Knee, I rode horse all the way around this camp twice. The first day we rode and showed the flag of the Little Bighorn. The second day, just rode to be riding, looking over a camp. I see no violence. I see no pipe bombs. I see no negative at all. No drugs, no alcohol. There might be some, but I don't know about it. And I didn't see people getting high or drinking or cussing or swearing. And I did not see no child being abused. That's impressive. For a camp this size, I've seen no grandmother or grandfather being denied, and they all seem to help one another. Truckloads and people coming in with food and sharing their food and sharing their time and sharing cigarettes and coffee and talking with another and laughing with one another and getting to know one another and songs, and all the beauty in the world is around us right now during this time of hardship, and it's just amazing to see 3,000 to 6,000 people coming together and can get along all at one time. It's beautiful, you know, it is. You see it, you look around, and everywhere you go you see a beautiful smile, a happy person, and it's good that way. It's real good, real powerful. Men standing up straight, women with their beautiful long hair, their pride, their dignity, babies laughing and smiling, and it's just good, you know, like that. It's just beautiful.
Did you see the Mexica and also the Hawaiian dancers?
Yes, yes, I did. I saw them in California. I saw them in Nevada, and then I saw them here. Oh, and at the Gathering of the Nations. Yeah, beautiful people.
I feel like there are a lot of people who don't understand how wide our roots are. I don't think they understand that we are in Mexico, Brazil. We are in Hawaii. We are everywhere. And I think a lot of people like to localize and I think they like to stigmatize what they think we are.
No. The U.S. government, when they told them to ratify and dialogue, they said they stopped sending letters to Native Americans because there was too many of them. They said there's too many of those damn hairy niggers, so we need to, so they broke them down into, first off, long time ago, okay, when the agreement was that every Indian should know their rights, okay, they wanted to be in charge, so they took on the responsibility of all the paperwork, black ink on white paper. And then when they found out how many natives there were between North and South America, East and West, that's when they said there's too many of them. In their time and day, they did a lot of cussing. Everybody knows that. And we got to learn French and Spanish over here. That's how we learned to cuss, okay? So it's not like for me to just cuss and it's natural. No, it's not like that. Our ancestors were beat, raped, and murdered and forced to talk English. And during that English, that was part of their language. And so we picked it up like little children pick up things. We picked it up, and hey, so guys. No, it's not a part of us.
How do you feel about the language barrier that's beginning to grow between generations? I'm a Mexican like my mother, but I didn't learn Spanish like her because my brother was autistic, and they believed that her teaching my brother how to speak Spanish was deterring his learning. So they forced her to not teach him Spanish and English, or they were going to call child services on her. Because of that, I can't speak to over half of my family. Do you think this is a bigger problem than people?
Oh, yes. That problem, I heard it in California. I heard it in New York. I heard it in Montana. I heard it in Texas, and you're hearing it here. That language is all over. It's everywhere. Even today, if you ever know the story about languages, if those Indians knew their language, they could all come together and they would superior over us because they had their own way of life. And if they have their own way of life, we wouldn't understand the word they're saying because English, there's 564 federal recognized tribes and all of us don't speak the same language. And so to make that barrier... to break the barrier was to force all of us to speak English.
Thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you.
Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Joseph Weber from Sonoma, California. I'm from Big Valley, Clear Lake area, Rancheria. We came down, our tribe donated a bunch of camping gear.
Nice.
Whatnot, so we drove all the way down.
Are there any more?
Actually came down from my son who's autistic that saw this. He's got a YouTube station. And came to me and said, Dad, there's no media out there. And I said, well, I don't know what this is. He wanted to put it on his YouTube. I said, okay, that's a good start. He asked me, would you go down there? I said, I don't know, let me see. But he pestered me for 2 weeks, and I said, you know what? If this means that much to you, I'll do it. So I told my tribe I was going to do it, and then they wanted to send donations, and I brought my niece and uncle and other niece and my daughter to enjoy the experience. And so we came down, met with Henry Red Cloud, and went over and looked at the solar stations because I'm a union electrician, and helped out over there, and then we came down the other day to help out, and as I said, we brought a bunch of donations, some walkie-talkies for the securities. And
hey, we brought walkie-talkies too. We also brought a glass pipe.
So we're getting all set. I think we're going to go meet Henry, and he's going to honor Sitting Bull's pipe, or Red Cloud's pipe. So.
How do you feel about this gathering?
I think it's a good thing. It's been a long time. I'm actually a product of the last one in California. My father, who I haven't met yet, is from this area. He walked all the way down from Wounded Knee collecting the brothers and sisters to the occupation of Alcatraz, where
oh my,
my mother. Hence, that's me. So I figure it's the least I can do from California to come down and help out down here and see what happens, because the last time, changes happened. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next.
What do you think about this being one of the largest gatherings of Native Americans in 150 years?
I think it's been too long.
It has.
I think it's a good start. I think we need to keep going, you know, maybe do reunions, keep the connections, all these people that we've met here, you know, the good feeling, you know. Make it not like Christmas. Let's try and do this every day. Look at the power that we can create.
I mean, all these flags are really staggering.
Very, very, very different cultures, but all coming together for the same thing. The same thing that we all know, the earth.
We're
running out of time. That's my uncle, too. He's a singer, too.
Nice.
So that's why we came down, as I said, to help out any way we can. So.
I'm wondering, what's been the most uplifting thing you've seen so far?
The unity. If you need something, hey, let me help you. Hey, my battery's dead. Hey, I'll jump you, or let's figure out how we can help each other. That's the one thing I've noticed here, is that it doesn't matter. If you're hungry, we'll feed you. If your car's not running, we'll help you. If you're on some firewood, hey, I can't help you, but let me show you where to go. We just came in with 7 loads for the whole tribe. Donated by another tribe. Every little tribe helps. Every little bit helps. It adds up. As they say, many hands make light work.
So I was wondering if there's anything that also upset you. What upset me was when I was coming in, we got some, like, roadblocks and some security. It was an educated checkpoint where they educated us on where we were going.
Yeah, but that's just them trying to test us or resolve. And once again, with this many people, it doesn't matter. You know, we're all united. You know, as I said, from California all the way down. You know, so it's there's parts that's going to be disappointing, but if you look at the whole, or look at the best, that's what you want to look for. It's the best. And you can't get better than this.
It's true. This is amazing. Is there anything you want to tell the public that you think they don't know and they need to know about this area? Like,
just tell your friends, because if you tell one person, they tell another, and it adds up. And look around how many people we have. If we all just tell one, we're doing good. Stay strong. Maybe a long haul, maybe short, but either way, we're here. We're here to help. That's all we need is help. People like us come down and help out. That's all you need. And real quick, we just did an interview. And shout out to my son, Daniel Weber, at home. He's over on YouTube, so give him a call. Daniel Weber, thank you.
Thank you so much. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hami Dakiapi, Winia Imacha, Bia Waslata Hemata Hamakbalekta Imacha. We machinchila ki Oaha, Minishoshe ki Aglagla, Washkata. So I grew up along the Missouri River. I'm from Wakwala, South Dakota. And I've been active on this since January. I have an amazing team. I'm one of many people. I assume I'm not here by myself, but I have an amazing team and an amazing community. And I'm just really people that know how to effectively communicate and that know how to make movement happen. And so, like, this is all an act of love and prayer, and we're standing for our future generations. We are protecting the future. That's why we're here, and that's why we're active. This is what we're doing, and why we're doing it is we want to make sure that our people are safe.
Can you tell me how this gathering makes you feel? I mean, it's huge.
Because camp was originally open on April 1st, and we went from April 1st to 45 on July 22nd, and then on August 8th, when we got the notice, the 48-hour notice, we were preparing, and then August 10th is when we started, and on the first day, there was 45 of us on the front line, 45, and we went from 45 to blown up to this. So it's the most moving and the most touching And I want to show you, like, this is the resilience of our people in North America. This is resilience of indigenous North America. And then we're all standing here. We're all testaments of pure love here. We're all the testaments of prayer. And the reason why all of us are here is because somebody fought for us. Somebody took their stand and said they were not going to be oppressed, and they were going to make sure their children live. And that's exactly why we're here now, is we're protecting that same future that was given to us by an example.
Yeah.
So it blew up so much that it's chaos, crazy,
it's beautiful.
Full of love, and you can actually feel it vibrate.
Man. Okay, I was wondering, is there anything that's happened so far that's really been uplifting to you, that's been like, wow, this is just... For me, it was seeing Mexica dancers here. I mean, being Mexican, it was kind of blown away.
I think it's the... I don't think it's one particular group. And realizing that this is the first time in history that over 200 plus tribes have come to stand in solidarity with us. To stand in solidarity and say no to the fossil fuel industry. And recognizing the fossil fuel industry is... it's going to annihilate us, and we're united. We are united. And what I want people to see and understand, like when you look around and you see this, I want them to feel the love. That's what they need to know. This is all based on the love. This is a movement about love.
Is there anything that's been off-putting to you during this gathering? For me, going past some checkpoints.
I actually didn't go until today. And what angered me the most, though, is like I knew these barricades were up, but I never went because I never want to subject myself to that type of negativity. But this time I wanted to see. I knew I was strong enough to go today, so I went. What makes me so disheartened is they would put barricades up around us, but yet in the Bakken area in North Dakota, every 3 weeks a man goes missing or is murdered. Every 3 seconds, a woman is murdered or missing in the Bakken area. And these are facts. These are not something that statistically we've ever came up with. No, these are facts. And the fact that they would much rather put up barricades around people that are saying no to the Bakken area, that speaks a lot about our government, and it speaks that these are elected officials that will protect companies and entities instead of the people. And the fact that Jill Stein would take a stand with us, and the fact that Amy Goodman, who did a documentary of us in an unbiased opinion, like she literally came and did her job as a reporter, for her to have a warrant out against her, it's devastating to show how far North Dakota will exert their power, even for the pettiest moves.
I was wondering what your opinion was on the recent court decision.
The denial was definitely devastating, but it came with stipulations. So even though there was a denial, it came with stipulations that we were asking for. We want meaningful, proper consultation. So not only Dakota Access has to recognize us, but... other entities like the Army Corps of Engineers, they have to recognize us as sovereign people, and that proper and meaningful consultation, that means allowing our experts to prove our facts, allow our experts to exert why this should or should not happen. And that's what meaningful consultation is, and we need to be not expendable. The fact that Army Corps of Engineers and Dakota Access will call us the low consequence areas, that should infuriate the whole Midwest, because anything south of us is the Midwest. The Missouri River goes to, so people are trying to make this like big media. Let me rephrase this. Big media saying Standing Rock Sioux tribes drinking water. Well, you cannot put an oil pipeline north upstream and not expect the Midwest to be affected by this.
It's really important. Now, is there anything you think you should say to the public that they don't know or they need to know about this gathering and this movement?
Well, movement can happen anywhere. If you can't make it here, that's okay. We still need our donation funds to be blasted. We still need our legal fund to be blasted, because our original arrestees are now getting ready to go to court. We need to cover their fines for standing up for us. We also want you to realize movement can happen anywhere. My favorite movement was in Lower Pearl, South Dakota. These 8-year-old boys who were 8 years, there's 8 boys that were 8 years old, made their own little signs and they stood on their own road screaming, "No DAPL." Movement can happen out anywhere and anyone can do it. Again, like I said, I'm not with like big organizations, big environmental organizations. I'm a teacher. I'm as common as ever, but I know when it's time to stand up and the time is now. And so it's just, there's a lot of movement and it feels really, really good here.
Thank you. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Okay, my name is Jaquela Hesse. I am from the Rosebud Reservation, and I represent Santa Gleska University as Ms. SG Mia.
Wow. So can you tell me why you're here?
I'm here with everybody else. I'm fighting to stop the pipeline and protecting our water, because we are the next generation and water is life. And it's really beautiful seeing everybody here together as one, all the nations. This is probably like one of the most inspiring things I've been at.
Tell me, how does this whole gathering make you feel? It's like the biggest one in 150 years, I think.
Yeah, it makes me feel like it's a good feeling. It's a really great feeling knowing that everybody's together. It's just beautiful being here.
Good to see you.
So, what do you feel has been like the most uplifting thing you've experienced during your time here?
Well, this is my first day being here. I haven't made it up this way yet, but seeing everything, it's really inspiring knowing that there's hope and that everybody's together.
So has there been anything that's been kind of down-putting, you know, scary, anything like that, that's kind of put you off? I mean, the roadblocks put me off.
Yeah.
I don't know about you.
I guess just like the stuff I've seen on social media, like it really makes you want to like pray harder, like, because it is, they're trying to tempt us to be the people we are known for, but we're not. We're here for in a peaceful way, and we're hoping our prayers are being heard and we're getting our point across.
So is there anything you'd like to tell the public that you don't think they already know about this kind of gathering?
I think everybody's pretty educated on how well we've been putting the word out and how known it is now, but it needs to be more heard and be stopped.
I'm Lorena James from California, Santa Rosa, California.
Awesome. So why are you here?
Oh, I'm here to support and help the natives as well.
Okay, how does being here make you feel?
I feel overwhelmed. We're here for you. It's very comforting.
We're not here for ourselves.
And loving to know that you just feel welcomed and at home.
So, what is the best experience you've had here so far?
Well, I've only been here. I've gotten here last night. So today, I've met actually a few different people. Very interesting. Learning experience, you know, seeing what you can, who you talk to, you know, what you can get from other people and help other people.
So can you tell me anything that's been unsettling to you here? Maybe I was unsettled by the roadblocks, honestly, for me.
Oh yeah, I heard about it, but we didn't get, like, you know, we didn't have to go through that process. We came in, like, it was easy for us to come in. So that was the upside of that, not having to deal with those.
Oh yeah.
And on top of it, we came in with, I don't know if you know Red Cloud, Henry Red Cloud.
No, I don't. Can you tell me a bit about him?
I don't really know much about him, but I know that he's a great grandson of Chief Henry Red Cloud from Pine Ridge,
oh.
I believe, South Dakota. Yeah, we came with them and he's the one who actually helped us to get in here mostly, but through security, like, let us know who, I guess he had some family in with security, so, but like I said, we didn't have complications coming in.
That's better for you. They had an information point where they stopped us with guards and said, "Do you know where you're going?" And I'm like, "Yes." And then they had to inform us. aggressively about where we are going.
Yeah.
I was been unsettled by the helicopters and the drones
I've seen. That this morning. I've actually seen a drone earlier, and the person, somebody broke down, and my uncle was helping them, and she just flashed them. And then they left. They flew away.
Hey.
And the helicopter I heard, and I was just like wondering like what it was, and then I seen it again, and then I heard somebody talking about it and saying that they're trying to see who or how many people were non-native here. Something like that. I don't know.
Hey, so is there anything you want to tell the general public? You know, something you don't think they know that you think they need to know about this gathering? Like maybe that there's no
pipeline. That a lot of people don't know, because I really don't know. And I'm trying to figure out and actually, you know, come to an understanding and actually understand what is going on and what's happening. Because, you know, all you hear is hearsay and everybody else is talking, and it's just like maybe to go to the main source and find out, you know.
I've heard about pipe bombs and hatchets. I'm like, none of that's happening. It's just prayer. It's just prayer, dance, you know, protecting the water. And so I just kind of wanted to come here myself.
Yes, me too. Yeah. And just to be a part of it, to help, you know, and support, you know, and make sure, like, that you have the more supporters the people see, the more, you know, it obviously causes some, like, understanding for people to understand that it's more than just what they think it's about, you know, about life, not just money and, you know, their profit, things like that.
Is there anything you'd like to say about the recent decision from the court?
I haven't, like I said, heard anything. I haven't gotten any, news feed from it, like, through the internet or anything. I haven't had any internet connection. I've been just blacked out. Just as much, and like I said, just going by here what's saying. And I heard they put a hold to it, so it's like, but what is that going to do, and how long is that for? And then what after that? You know, what comes then? Back to this, back to everybody coming together to show them once again that it's more than that.
After a while, it's just like, you know, cautious relief. You're just like, when is it going to end?
Yes, definitely.
Standing Rock is winterizing their camp. If you're able to help with materials, they're looking for fire starter logs, extreme cold weather boots, extreme cold weather sleeping bags to withstand up to negative 40 degrees below zero, extreme cold weather wool socks, hand and foot warmers, earmuffs and gloves, engine warmers. To mail donations, please send them to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Attention, donations. P.O. Box D, as in dog, building number 1, North Standing Rock Avenue, Fort Yates, North Dakota, 58538. Also needed are larger items like building materials, cinder blocks, plywood, rebar, 2x4s, firewood, and logs. Please contact public relations at standingrock.org. To donate online to the official fund for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, visit bit.ly/official Standing Rock. That's bit.ly/official Standing Rock. Thank you for listening to this important update. Minnie Wachoni, Water is Life.